This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. Tucson, we're going to the Phantom Space Facility. Bob, what is that? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Phantom is a rocket startup founded by a guy named Jim Cantrell, who had been the CEO of another rocket startup, Vecta, that went belly up, unfortunately. Cantrell didn't give up, so he put together another company, Phantom, and I've reported on them in the past. They're a startup. They haven't flown anything yet, though they, you know, have possibilities. But he gave me a tour about 3 years ago, and so he invited me to come back, and he was going to have an event at his place for his workers in a sense, because Apollo 16 astronaut Charles Duke has agreed to be an advisor for the company. And so he was going to visit the company for the first time. So Jim Cantrell put together a little event for his employees, and he invited me to go as well. We got to hear Charlie Duke talk about his Apollo 16 mission and his life. As usual, he's an astronaut. He's very nonchalant about things. Him and John Young on their rover drove up the slope of Stone Mountain, reaching an elevation of 500 feet, which is the highest any human has ever been on the lunar surface. And I asked him, you know, that's pretty remote from all humanity. And he just laughed. We felt at home there. They had done so many simulations and studying of the terrain beforehand that from the very first moment they looked at it, we just come back home. So he was kind of fun. But then we got a tour of the place, and we got a sense of what's happened to Phantom over the last 3 years. And I can sum it up pretty bluntly. This story confirms what I've been saying now for the last year and plus, that the atmosphere for new rocket startups has become a little bit bleak in the last 2-3 years, and there's two reasons for that. Reason number one is that a lot of the rocket startups that were beginning to fly or about to try to fly all failed. Astris was flying, but it had problems, so it shut down its rocket. Relativity flew once and then decided to abandon that rocket and wait 3 more years for a bigger one. ABL tried several times to launch and had problems. And then Vecta, as Jim Cantrell said, just went belly up. They built engines for their rocket that were too weak, and so they lost their funding and went out of the business. And so that dried up a lot of the investment capital the last few years. The other reason is regulatory, the regulatory framework. The FAA imposed its new streamlined Part 450 back in 21, and that immediately shut everything down because it takes forever to get everything approved now. It's just impossible. And that's very bad for startups. They can't handle that kind of difficult bureaucracy. And so they showed me the thing, and they're struggling, and they're surviving. They hope to have their first launch of that Daytona rocket in 26. They have its flight tanks have been qualified. Its upper stage engines have been tested and qualified, and its first stage engines are right now being qualified. The pieces are there. I have my fingers crossed. Let's just hope, John.
SpaceX, the success of a Super Heavy and Starship withstanding, we had a meeting of the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality in the middle of October. What happened, Bob?
This is an example of that bureaucracy that's been choking commercial rocketry in the United States. In the case of SpaceX, they are big and they are powerful, so they can fight these kind of things. But an example of that is the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality has been one of those agencies that's been slowing Starship launches down because of the deluge system that the rocket uses on the ground. It throws out potable water, and we all know potable water is very, very poisonous. You can't let any environmental life touch it because humans can drink it. And so they had a public meeting, the first of several, to discuss the licensing for SpaceX. And what was interesting to me is that the only people that showed up was about 4 dozen anti-SpaceX activists. Very clearly, this was an organized bust-in group led by the local group Save RGV, that's Rio Grande Valley. This is the activist group that's been filing most of the legal challenges against SpaceX. They represent almost nobody in the Brownsville area. Of course, they're portrayed by the press article as what everyone wants. But no, nobody in Brownsville wants to stop SpaceX. It's doing wonders for the local community. But they were there, and they flooded the meeting. There's going to be another public meeting in mid-November. I was making suggestions that maybe some of the local people in Brownsville should get together and show up as well to kind of like give the real voice of the public in that kind of that area.
We go to SpaceX story as well, but this has to do with something that's important here. It's called direct-to-cell constellation. What is that, Bob?
Yes, it's interesting. There are two companies that are trying to put together right now a constellation of satellites whereby your cell phone can use those satellite that satellite constellation as a cell tower. So in other words, if you're in a remote area where there are no cell towers and you're in a dead spot, the cell phone will instead access the satellite constellation, and therefore there will be no dead spots. SpaceX decided it was going to do this a little over a year ago. It made its first launch of the direct-to-cell Starlink satellites. It's a slightly more revised version of a Starlink satellite that can do both jobs, the internet it normally does, plus the direct-to-cell service. They started launching them in January. With their most recent launch out of Vandenberg on this, the company says it only needs five more launches to complete the entire constellation. That'll be about a little over 300 satellites total. They've already got 260 in the air, something like that. And that just indicates the speed in which SpaceX works. They conceived this idea about a year ago, and they've almost got the constellation entirely up. They have a deal with T-Mobile. There are, of course, court suits about that from its competitors to try to stop it, but I don't think that's going to work. And so we have one option right now for direct-to-cell. If you have T-Mobile, very soon you'll be able to use Starlink satellites to fill in those dead spots. They're not the only one, John. I'll go straight to the next story. AST Mobile is the competitor in this, AST Space Mobile. They first launched test satellites last year, and earlier this year, they launched just about a month and a half ago, they launched five satellites, the first in their constellation of about 100-something satellites, maybe more. And they have now successfully unfolded the very, very large antenna arrays of those five satellites. These are the biggest in square footage, the biggest satellites that have ever been launched, basically, commercial satellites. And they have deals with AT&T to provide the same kind of service as T-Mobile is offering through Starlink. And they hope to be operational next year. And so we've got two different direct-to-cell satellite constellations already in space and on the verge of becoming operational, John.
Space debris, a detection of 500 pieces. What breakup, Bob? What satellite breakup?
This was Intelsat's 33E satellite. It was launched in 2016, so it's not a new satellite. It's been up for a long time. When it was first launched, it had a few thruster problems, but they managed to get it into position and have been using it. But for some reason, it broke up about a week ago, and it appears that it has as many as 500 pieces in orbit, in geosynchronous orbit, all of which do pose a problem for other geosynchronous satellites. Isn't that definitely an issue? I will point out that the satellite was built by Boeing, and most of the press is trying to blame Boeing for this, and I don't think that's at all fair. Boeing might have its problems, but this is, like, ridiculous. They launched this almost a decade ago. It's been operating all that time. It appears either there was an explosive event in the spacecraft itself, or it got impacted by something. We don't know what caused this breakup. However, I'll tell you this, the 500 pieces demonstrate there is a profit center here in orbit. Once again, space junk is something that these geosynchronous satellite companies will want to get rid of. This is the problem. And they'd be glad to pay for someone to do this. Unfortunately, right now, no one yet has the capability. But by gosh, if someone had the capability, they'd have a contract like now to get this stuff out of orbit.
The sky is falling routinely in China. This time, a launch to the space station. How many boosters fell, Bob? One or two?
The rocket they used was the Long March 2F. It launched from interior northwest China. It had three astronauts on board for a six-month mission on the Tiangong-3 space station. The rocket itself had I think four side boosters and core stage, all of which drop somewhere in China, all of which use very toxic hypergolic fuel, which will dissolve your skin if it touches you. We don't know where they crashed. The crew did dock with their station and has now started its work. They're achieving a great thing with their space station, but they really should fix the problem with their rockets, John.
Bob, can you imagine the Texas Environmental Group dealing with China? We object to dropping boosters on our village. I can imagine what the authorities...
But you got to remember something, John. If they in the U.S., they could attend a public meeting, and the commission would have to listen to them. In China, if they tried such a thing, they'd be in prison. So there's a difference.
That's a happy ending, Bob. Okay, we move on to good. I think this is good news. I always try to find good news in Bob's reporting. Sutherland, what is that, Bob?
Sutherland is one of the two spaceports that's been trying to get its red tape taken care of so they can start doing launches. And this is the United Kingdom. And Sutherland is on the northern coast of Scotland. It has gone through many years of bureaucratic red tape. It had submitted a plan for the spaceport to a local council back in December last year that apparently wasn't satisfactory. They revised this plan. It involved a smaller launch pad and realigning a road so it wouldn't have to dig up as much peat, because peat absorbs carbon dioxide, and that's, of course, great. We have to stop carbon dioxide from destroying us all. And it appears now the Sutherland Council has approved this new plan. This approval also squashes a legal objections by a local billionaire landowner who has invested in the other spaceport in the UK, Saxaford, and he's been fighting this particular Sutherland spaceport for several years legally. He owns property in the area. He doesn't want it there. You know, not in my neighborhood, man. But he had sued because he didn't like the fact that we're going to put a small antenna on a hill, a mountain nearby that has already a lot of radio towers on top. And the council basically squashed that offense. So now the situation is they just have to give launch licenses to Orbex, the main customer for Sutherland. Orbex submitted its launch license to the United Kingdom Civil Aviation Authority in February of 22. That is 2.5 years ago. It has still not approved the launch license. So we'll have to see where things go down the road. Maybe the CAA was just simply waiting for the local council to approve, or maybe not. We'll have to wait.
The UK needs something to look to the future, Bob. They're struggling right now with their budget and their lack of growth. So I hope that Saxaford goes forward along with a Sutherland.
Sutherland, me too.
They need them both. All right. Bob Jaxa, these are first-rate engineers, but they don't seem to be getting boosters right. This is a grasshopper type, which is experimental, but what do we think is the holdback in with Jaxa?
All right. Let me tell the story here. This is a grasshopper type test vehicle for learning doing vertical takeoff and landings for a rocket, kind of like SpaceX's grasshopper that flew 15 years ago. That was set up the possibility of the first stage on Falcon 9 being reusable, which it has been now more than 300 times. So this project called Callisto is actually a joint project of three government agencies: JAXA, which is Japan's space agency; CNES, which is France's space agency; and DLR, which is Germany's space agency. These three government agencies first proposed Callisto, this hopper, in 2015, which is about the time SpaceX first successfully vertically landed. So they basically were trying to respond to that. And they said they were going to do this test flights to prove out the idea so they could start doing reusable rockets. That was 2015. It is now 2024, and JAXA has now confirmed what I had reported previously, that the first test flight of Callisto will not happen any earlier than 26. That's 15 years. That's 11 years, I'm sorry, after they first proposed this test project. And so what the problem here has nothing to do with engineers, John. It has to do with government agencies being unable to get anything accomplished. Three different government agencies, no less, you know, trying to – that's like a Frankenstein monster. It's bad enough getting one government agency to get things done right. You try to put three together from three different nations and two different continents, half across the world, and it's no surprise after more than a decade, nothing has happened.
Bob Zimmerman, Behind the Black. We're going exploring. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.